there's something naive and youthful about Devin White that's a little bit appealing. You know, he's not a ruthless businessman, which I like. If they pull off a stunner Monday night, all bets are off. And that's 6-11. You can put that where the sun don't shine.
Yeah. Buccaneers fans, Ira Kaufman is on. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com. He's here. We've got so much to talk about. There's a Monday night football game coming up. Undefeated clash at the Lighthouse. And you can get there on your Bill Curry Ford brand new vehicle. 480 vehicles available right now on the lot. You can check them all out at BillCurryFord.com. You can custom order your Ford right now. There is no deposit. That's also at BillCurryFord.com. And you get a $500 gift card just for doing it, Ira, from General Manager Sean Sullivan, who wants to help you personally. He wants to hand you the Ira Kaufman discount, which is pretty cool. And if you don't like Ira, you can just say the Joe Bucks fan discount. So that always works as well. Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, 64 years. Their construction is almost finished, Ira, on the brand new, reinvented Bill Curry Ford, but they are open for business. They've got construction deals. BillCurryFord.com. Check them out today. And the Sage will be back, but this time at Big Storm Ybor City, Tampa. Here comes Ira. Centro Ybor upstairs, Big Storm Brewery, Sunday, October 1st. The ugly, ugly clash, because it's always ugly when the Saints are involved with the Saints. Buccaneers at Saints upstairs. Going to be a fun time. The drink special prices and all the other special prices are at JoeBucksFan.com right now, Ira, so that's exciting. And it's going to be a fun time. Easy parking, just a good time on a Sunday in Ybor, great food. So bring your appetite, head in about noon. Ira will be there about noon, and it's going to be a good setup. They've got all the games with the Sunday ticket. BigStormBrewery.com, see all the Big Storm tap room locations, check out all the menus, follow them on social media, and you can see the different specials and live music and all kinds of stuff. It's always good to get the Sage out there. And Florida's Elite Restoration, Ira, we'll talk about them later. Our good friends there, Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Sage, great podcast, you and Lee. If anybody has not enjoyed it yet, it is out there on all the platforms at JoeBucksFan.com, talking about some of the interesting things going on in the locker room after last game and some interesting takes by Ira. One that really needs to be flushed out, Ira. Very, very important. And we're ready to go here. Ira, are you ready, young man?
Steve, I can't wait to get back to Ybor City and Big Storm after a five-month hiatus. Steve, last time I was there was for the draft. We had a heck of a turnout. Great party. Sean Sullivan showed up from, Bill Curry Ford. You were there, Steve. Some other people that we knew, and we met new people. Great place to watch a Bucks game. Great place. The Bucks will be coming off a short week, Stevie, off a Monday night game. It's a 1 o'clock Sunday game against the Saints. And by the way, New Orleans, I think they're playing like garbage, and it just shows you that there's a lot of bad teams out there, guys. A lot of bad teams. The Bucks just saw one in the Chicago Bears, and I think this Justin Fields experiment's running its course.
Yeah, I don't know what Bucks fans can look forward to more. You know, the Bucks Monday night game, undefeated teams, bashing helmets together. Like the old style Monday Night Football graphic show where the two helmets are smashing together. This is what I can say about our long and faithful readers from Tampa, from Hillsborough County. You may not be getting a baseball stadium, but you're getting Ira and Ybor.
That's a bargain. They win that one. They win that one.
Absolutely.
And Ira, I'm very disappointed that you didn't mention that when we were out there last time. Josh and his crew from Florida's Elite Restoration were out there. How dare you, Ira? How dare you mention Sean and not Josh?
And what a crew it was. Boy, they do a tremendous job. We've been very lucky, guys. Very, very fortunate in the Bay Area with killer storms. Other parts of the state are not so fortunate. But if you ever have any water damage or you think you might have any or mold issues, you've got to go with Florida's Elite Restoration. Josh and his crew do a heck of a job.
All right, Sage, look, I want to give a public service announcement for fans. The Monday night football game against the Eagles starts at 7:15 p.m. Now, I forgot that they had the two games going on Monday night football three times this year. Three different nights or doubleheaders of Monday Night Football. This past Monday was one of them. I turned on the Saints game. I'm ready to watch the Saints and the Panthers, and it's 6 minutes left in the second quarter because they were the early game. So don't make that mistake with the Bucs. 7:15 kickoff against the Eagles. That means Ira will be mauling the buffet at 5:53 p.m. So just a heads up there. Sage, a couple of things here. You mentioned that those spies, and if you watch the film, you see often it's Trajan Soyinka and Devin White. Always Devin White pretty much spying. It's what Lee was calling for, pretty much spying Justin Fields all day. But the double spy, when a lot of guys were rotating in with that, the doubling of the spy was something different. That was a new wrinkle. And a lot of people were calling, hey, blitz Justin Fields. Well, you know what? The spy thing worked even better. He didn't run and he seemed a little confused. And it was great. And I got a note that, crazy as it was, one of those times where they had the two spies out there, it was a passing down. And there's Trajan Soyinka. He's standing there. Shaq hits Fields and so did Mike Green. And Fields is sort of wobbling, but he didn't go down. And in comes Trajan Soyinka for a sack, and he wasn't even rushing the passer. You know, it just worked on all levels for Todd Bowles, and, you know, score one for him. He is the mastermind.
What makes it a lot more challenging heading into Monday night, let's be honest, on his best day, Justin Fields can't throw a ball like Jalen Hurts. He just can't. Even though Hurts hasn't been particularly impressively early in the season, he's still the MVP runner-up from last year. Some people thought he should have won it. He was great in the Super Bowl. He's perfect for that offense that they want to run. So he's a downfield throw threat. And, of course, Lee, he's got better weapons than Justin Fields. I mean, A.J. Brown, he's elite. He's elite. And Devonta Smith is nobody to fall asleep on. Mm-hmm. And Goddard's a pretty good tight end. So I think Bowles is going to have to tweak things. But if anybody can do it, it's him. And by the way, Lee, and this is something that you and Steve pay a lot of attention to, and I happen to notice it. I think it was Brian Baldinger, Lee, and that guy knows this stuff, no question about it. Strong in the trenches.
Oh, yeah.
And he did a segment, and he was focused squarely, on number 50. And Steve, I know you've watched the game about five times on replays and highlights. Man, from the highlights they showed, Vita Vea was a one-man wrecking crew. Steve, the times he wasn't just utilizing two blockers and freeing things up for other guys, he was bouncing guys around, throwing them around like rag dolls, making a beeline for Justin Fields, getting him off his comfort zone. Vita Vea is playing some great football, guys.
Yes, he is. Baldinger had three or four separate videos about the Bucs game with the Bears. And one of those segments, he highlighted Justin Fields in the fourth quarter. By the way, when they made the comeback, and Baldinger just couldn't believe, he goes, well, what's this guy looking at? And this was after Jamel Dean got hurt. Of course, Carlton Davis was inactive because he's got a messed up toe. And there were guys wide open, as in Bruce Arians' wide ass open. And for whatever reasons, Fields didn't see them. And it wasn't like Fields did not have time to throw. He had time to throw. For whatever reason, he never saw these guys. So looking back at that video that Baldinger was pointing out, and specifically what time of the game it was, the Bucs may have gotten a little bit lucky. I mean, I know people are heaping praise on Zion McCollum. I'm still uncomfortable with that guy out there. As far as tweaking, Bowles tweaking the defense, the one thing that needs to be tweaked, I think, completely out of Bowles' control, is Davis going to play?
You know what worries me the most, Steve, about this game? I don't know if the Bucs O-line can hold up, Steve, against these pass rushers. They're relentless. They come from everywhere. They're leading the league in knocking down quarterbacks. They're second in pressures, third in hurries. Not so much in sacks, Steve, but they're disruptive. And they're like 7-8 deep. You know, every year they draft a guy in the first round. I mean, for the defensive line. I mean, it's like every year. You know, Jalen Carter this year, it's like a godsend. No, nobody wanted him. They got turned off to the guy, and the Eagles said, we'll take him. Turns out, looks like the guy's a damn good player. So, Steve, Mayfield's been masterful, let's be honest, about making that free guy miss, that guy that comes in untouched. I don't know. That's living dangerously, Steve. Dangerous.
In the same way that, you know, some of the ways you could say the Bucs got a little lucky against the Bears, you could go the other way and say the Bears got a little lucky that the Bucs didn't put more points up. Just one of those games. And the Eagles, yeah, honestly, Ira, I think this is going to be a very humbling game for the Bucs. But I don't think it's going to tell us much about them because I don't think that they were on a plane, certainly early in the season before they even figure out the whole offense and all that. I didn't expect them to do anything against the Eagles because the Eagles are so much better. So even if the Bucs lose this game, Ira, by 17 points, it's not going to tell me anything about the Bucs that I don't already know, which is they're doing well, but they're not necessarily ready for the playoffs tomorrow, which you're not supposed to be in September.
I think that's a great point, Lee. I think the same thing would hold true for the game against the 49ers. You know, speaking of a relentless pass rush, here comes Nick Bosa. But, Lee, if you don't turn the ball over, which the Bucs haven't done a single time in eight quarters, you can usually hang with the team. Unless Philly brings its A game, you know, the Bucs can hang and be fairly close going into the fourth quarter, especially if they force some takeaways and don't give up the ball. That's a great equalizer, right, Lee? I mean, it's every year. You've heard me say it, Lee, now for 7-8 years. It's the number one stat in football for a reason. For a reason. You win the turnover battle over the years. You go plus 10, plus 12. You're usually going to have a winning record. If you're minus 15 for the season, unless you're a team with Patrick Mahomes or something, you're done. You're buried.
Yeah, and look, we've talked about turnovers so many different ways. There is a little luck involved. Even if you just look at this game right here, Ira, that we just had, first pass of the game, Baker Mayfield fires it directly to the the Bears. First pass of the game, he pulled the old Jameis Winston right out of the tunnel. Boom. And Mike Evans did a great job breaking it up. That was the first play of the game, so they went on from there. Jake Kamara does an incredible job recovering the blocked kick near midfield. That could have been a fumble, a scoop and score right there, and Todd Bowles wouldn't be talking about how great they played. So, you know, it's all kind of relative, but that's football, and the Bucs are doing a lot of great things, enough to win, enough to look good, and you know, we'll see when they get tested here what they actually look like, but the defense should be able to keep them at least pretty close in this game. But like Lee said, I'm concerned about the injuries too. Without your number one corner, you know, you're still down. Cansey and some other guys are banged up as well. It makes it more challenging.
And Lee, speaking of Kamara, and we should focus on the young man for a moment. Lee, is there anything this kid can't do? I mean, he's a good athlete. And I think in a year or two, he might be the best punter in football. And he's pretty close now. Boy, he's great at dropping it inside the 20. That's a big, big factor in winning games in terms of field position. He made a play this year, like Steve just said. And Lee, didn't he make a play last year along the sideline? I don't know if it was a punt. I don't know if it was a punt return or something, but he made some kind of a tackle or something. I can't remember it, but
yeah, Kamara's really, really something. I told a member of the Bucs media relations about how he looks like Yakov Stalin. The guy's like, how in the world did that cross your mind that Jake Kamara looks like Yakov Stalin? He goes, who the hell even knows who Yakov Stalin is? But you. And I said, well, I'm a history geek. What can I say?
You are a history geek, Lee. There's no question about it. And Steve, while we're talking about preparations for this week, and at halftime, Rondé Barber will be honored. I believe he's going to get his Hall of Fame ring at the halftime ceremony. Lee, I'm not sure TV's going to show that. They probably won't, which is a reason to get Buck fans out to the stadium and then drown out those Eagle fans.
Steve, you should have seen Ira. Someone in the media was telling Ira he listened to Ira's presentation of Barber live, and he was impressed. And Ira was like, what do you mean live? You weren't in the room. Someone had access to the Zoom call.
Yeah.
And he heard the Zoom call, and Ira was just, for like 2 hours, you would have thought you were talking to Chris Russo.
I'm just flabbergasted, Steve. I'm surprised he didn't tape it, and I'm a little disappointed he didn't tape it.
Well, I'm sure if you ask the Hall of Fame, they have a tape of it, because they probably pressed record on the Zoom call, and you can record it. So maybe we can get that to for posterity there somehow, put it in the Sage's archives. Hey, Ira, the Jake Kamara thing, seriously, with that 72-yard punt that he had, no bounce. And if you watch the punt, it's about 82 yards in the air. I don't know why the Bucs, first of all, they didn't even put it out there as its own video to watch on social media. They put everything else out there. And if somebody looks that up, because I think it was one of the longest punts of all time, somebody that may actually be the farthest punt in the air in the history of the NFL. And I don't recall any wind out there. Do you?
That's the point, Dave. This wasn't Giant Stadium or Denver, you know, with a south wind behind his back kicking towards the north end zone. Boy, he got every bit of that. And, you know, some people were skeptical of drafting Kamara, using a draft pick on a punter. Those people pretty silent today.
Are you referring to Sean Sullivan? Because he's the JoeBucksFan.com draft guru, and he was in that camp, but a lot of people were. And unless your punter is a superstar, you shouldn't go get him in the fourth round. But damn, it looks like he might be a superstar.
That's right. If you draft him in the fourth round late, the guy better be damn good. And Kamara fits the bill.
Well, you know, everybody always hearkens to light drafting Roberto Aguayo. So anytime light drafts a kicker or a punter, people go mental. But this time it worked out.
Ira, speaking of Jason Light making people mental, we have to talk about the running back position. Because you know what? One big reason why you asked me 17 times before the season about my confidence in the offensive line, I was confident because of Jason Light and because the picks there are legitimate draft picks, higher picks on the line. And Light's got a great track record, played the position, whatever. But he does not have a good track record at running back. I don't count bringing Leonard Fournette in as Light being a genius. And it just hasn't been very good over the years. And that's okay. Not every GM is great at every position. But here we sit right now with Rashad White being okay through two games. Sean Tucker ran for less than a yard a carry. And that's not acceptable against the Bears. And we've got Keyshawn Vaughn in the doghouse, and we've got Chase Edmonds, who's injured. So here we are. Now, if the Glazers, this is what I contend, Ira, if they're really serious about winning, and they should be at 2-0 there, they should be hungry to get another running back in here. Are they going to really push to get a running back in here, Ira? Because if you want to win, you probably want to find a number two running back that you can count on, at the very least, a 1A guy, because you're got a built-to-run offense, and the other guys aren't that great behind White.
You're not off base, Steve. I mean, Canales, you know, he's got a goal in mind. It's probably like 30 carries as a minimum. They had 34 against the Bears. Cam Akers, Kareem Hunt, I'll pass on those two. But Lee, in the general principle that Steve's talking about, I think he's on to something. Especially, Lee, if they go into the bye week 3-1, which I think is very feasible at this point, and maybe they didn't think they'd be 3-1 at the bye week. And at that point, you reassess your team. We talked about it 2 months ago with, hey, if things go off the rails, you got to reassess. Well, Lee, if you're better than advertised and things are going your way, you got to reassess in that respect. Mm-hmm. And fortifying the running back position, I think, is priority one at that point. Please, somehow they're running the ball in great quantity without great quality, but they're running the ball. And they're not throwing the ball 43 times a game like they did in each of the last 2 years. And Lee, part of it is they're playing great defense. I mean, if they weren't playing great defense, we'd be talking about what the hell's wrong with this running game. And we're not. We're not. They're 2-0, and so we're not going to be nitpicking. But Lee, I think they need some help in the backfield. I thought they needed it before Edmonds got hurt.
Yeah, I've been writing this all offseason. I got to the point that I was sick of writing it. I've written it so much. The amount of time throwing the ball, you know, again, I go back to if something's not working, I don't know why you keep pounding your head against the wall, number one. Number two, it's Tom Brady. Relax. It's okay. Tom Brady's throwing. And I'm a pass-first guy, but I don't think you want Baker Mayfield throwing the ball 40-plus times a game. It's one thing if Brady's throwing a lot. It's totally different if Mayfield's throwing a lot. So I don't think you want him throwing a lot. And I'm like Steve, and I'm like you, Ira. I'm concerned about the backfield. But what makes me uber concerned, if that is such a term, is that Bowles and Canales say over and over and over and over and over, they want to run the ball. Again, part of that is they don't want Mayfield throwing 40 times a game. I get it. But if you really want that 1990s offense and pound the ball, you better get a quality running back. I don't think the Bucs have a quality running back. I'm not yet ready to throw Rashad White overboard. I'm going to give Sean Tucker all the rope he needs because You know, he missed an entire offseason because of his heart issue. But if you are, like Steve was saying, if you are serious about winning and your coach wants to run the ball, your offensive coordinator wants to run the ball, and you have a quarterback that is better off when you run the ball, you better have someone you could bank on. I don't think they have that right now.
Sage, let me throw a couple numbers out here and put my flag in the ground here. First, Baker Mayfield in two games has dropped back to pass 80 times. That's 40 times a game. So I just want to make that clear. That's what he's been doing right now. And they haven't even been under a ton of pressure to throw the football. So I told you early this year, I think they're going to be focused on this pass more than you think. Now they want to do both, but he's been throwing a lot. And I think part of that's because of the run game isn't what they hoped it would be. As far as Sean Tucker, I can't give him any rope because we're here to win games. And he was there training camp. He ran all through the preseason. He's got 13 carries for 22 yards. It's not acceptable. Is Keyshawn Vaughn that bad? And is he that deep in the doghouse where we can't look at the guy who's had some success before? And Bowles was asked on his radio show whether they would turn to Keyshawn Vaughn with Edmonds out or would he get a chance to take on some of the load? Bowles' response, Sean Tucker can handle more. Definitely, he can step up. And that was his answer to the Keyshawn Vaughn question.
Vaughn didn't do himself any favors with this organization, Lee, by pouting. He didn't. Lee, he was on shaky ground to begin with. We're not talking about Christian McCaffrey here. So, you know, he was trying to fight to get, you know, three carries a game to begin with. And then he goes AWOL. He pisses off Bowles. He pisses off Canales, even pisses off Light, the guy who drafted him, Lee, ultimately. And I don't think Light can make a stirring argument. Let's get more Keyshawn Vaughn in there, which I think was part of the thinking, Lee, maybe before training camp started. I think Vaughn was in the mix a little bit, not as the number one, but a guy who can maybe get eight touches. And I think he's self-destructed, Lee. I think the hole's too big for him to crawl out of.
Well, how pissed off was Bowles? Because I know that, you know, after, you know, Bowles said that Keyshawn Vaughn was an unexcused absence.
Yeah.
But Bowles also added, I don't blame him for being mad.
Well, he doesn't blame him for being mad, but he doesn't like the way he handled it, Lee. And you can contrast that with Mike Evans, who's hacked off and still a little frustrated, but you'd never know it, Lee. You'd never know.
Well, he's a pro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Bowles was just reflecting on his time as a player, that he knew guys who, when they got demoted and learned that, hey, they're not in the game plan because they're the fourth stringer, that they stormed out of the building and they came back and were good players at some point. So, I don't know. I think he was probably thinking back to his days, but it still doesn't make it a good way to react. And, you know, Jason Light, as Lee referenced, he put it out there in the offseason, you know, hey, we need more Keyshawn Vaughn, and all of a sudden, No, we don't. Sage, Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, and we're always trying to read between the lines on this show because that's what we do, right? We can't just call what all the fans are seeing. We got to put our knowledge to the test and all this stuff. And I'm listening to Buccaneers Radio Network. Larry Foote is on, and he's asked about Tryon-Shoyinka, who he coached in previous seasons. And he's asked about, breakthrough game and all this stuff. Foote wouldn't even say that he played well. He said plenty of other guys played well, but he wouldn't say that he played well. He said, you know, it's third year, and the way I view NFL players, your third year is your make or break year. You're not a fourth year, not a second year. It's third year, and you got to do this, you got to do that. And he just talked about how Tryon-Shoyinka has to show it, and he's got to keep improving. And he just kind of left it at that when he's praising all kinds of other guys and saying, this guy's my guy and that guy's my guy, and talking about how Levante David is, almost like a co-coach, and he's raving about KJ Britt having an amazing third year and what a training camp. But Tryon-Shoyinka, nope, flatline.
Very interesting. That tells me one thing above all. They don't want anything to go to this guy's head. There have been times, Lee, not a lot, but some rare occasions when he played well, the light seemed to come on, and Bowles was impressed with his performance over a 60-minute span. And then Lee, he fell on his ass the following week. And it happened. It's happened during these 2 years. And they'll be damned if they're going to let that happen again. I think it was very deliberate by Foot. I think he's speaking for Bowles, too. It tells you a little bit about the mindset of Trajan Shoyinka, you know, his attitude, his mental, his psyche, Lee. Keep playing, young man. Keep playing. But we're not giving you any things to put on your personal bulletin board until you could put a string of games like that together. Lee, I thought he played very well. I mean, you know, if Foot doesn't want to say it, Lee, we can say it. To Steve's point, he had a difficult role, Lee, because he couldn't go balls out for Justin Fields if he's going to be part of this spy system, which I think Steve's right. I think he was an integral part of it. So Lee had a lot on his mind going into the Chicago game and a lot to think about. And he still came up to be a disruptive force, even though part of his role was to was containment. I got to give the guy credit. Now, Lee, can he do it again against maybe the best offensive line in football? That's a tall order.
Yeah, let's see it, right?
Sage, I got to put your feet to the fire. If I had been on the last podcast, I would have asked you. A couple of readers, angrily, I'll say, reached out saying you better ask Ira. And I want to ask you now. So you're ready to have your feet put to the fire, or you want me to do that a little later?
I can't believe there's any problem with Lee and I's podcast. We were very generous with our praise, but I'm ready for you, Steve.
I didn't say there was a problem with it. All right. Hey, before I grill you, Ira, Bill Curry Ford, it is there for everyone. Mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Family owned. It makes a difference. Just shop there first and give them a chance, and they will make it worth your while. BillCurryFord.com. GM Sean Sullivan is there for you. And just reach out with any questions you have. His email is at the website. Call him up, and they are so accommodating, and they'll just help you with whatever you need, even if it's down the road. You just have a question. You want to buy your kid a vehicle for Christmas. Call him now. Find out what it might take to do that. BillCurryFord.com. All right, Ira. You predicted a 6-win Buccaneer season. They're 2-0. You want to adjust your prediction, or do you stand behind it? Where is the sage at? Before you answer, I will say to everybody, Ira called the Bucs a very lively and strong underdog and saw no reason why they couldn't come out with a win against the Vikings. And obviously, the sage picked the Bucs against the Bears in this past week. So I don't think you're too surprised, too shocked that they're 2-0. But what's your answer, Ira?
I'm reluctantly sticking with 6-11. I'm not a front runner, Lee. I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. Not yet. Now, look, Lee, if they pull off a stunner Monday night, all bets are off. And that's 6-11. You can put that where the sun don't shine, DeKemper. I can tell you that right now. But, you know, beating Philly is a hell of a tall order. Hell of a tall order. And I don't think the Eagles can take the Bucs lightly when they look at the standings. And, look, the schedule gets a lot tougher, and I still, maybe I'm making too much of this, Lee, but this week five bye week, I just think that's a killer. You know, the injuries are going to mount in October and November, and you don't have a week off to recoup and regroup. I think ultimately that's a real hindrance to me. Right now, Lee, I'm going to stick with 6-11, hoping I'm wrong.
We all hope you're wrong there, Ira, because we all want the Bucs to make the playoffs, and it's a good sign that they're 2-0. Just, you know, I always reference that site, or excuse me. Oh, that's very encouraging, Ira, that 64% of the teams since 1990 that began a season 2-0 have made the playoffs. That's very encouraging.
And Sage, the stat itself is even a little flawed because only a few years ago they expanded the playoffs to include a seventh team. So now that number is going to go up as the years go on here. So it's an interesting number for a lot of reasons as we move forward here. I got a question for you, Ira. It goes to your 6-11 prediction. At tight end, you've seen two games now at tight end. Cade Otton, nice game, 6 catches on 6 targets this last game. Sort of a nice bounce back. And no big plays, but some important catches for sure. Coe Keeft has no catches this year. David Wells, who's the number 3 guy who's actually playing, he got his first NFL catch in 7 years in this past game, and then his second catch turned into a fumble that Camarda recovered. And you know that didn't go over well in at $1 with Todd Bowles. So do the Bucks? My question is, do they have enough at tight end to be a playoff team and have the running game and the passing support for Evans and Godwin that they need? Do you think that's a priority if they're looking for an in-season move, or do you keep it more on running back?
I don't think it's an in-season move. I think Jason Light, and we'll see about Canales, who didn't coach Kate Otten last year. We'll see what they think towards the end of the season about Kate Otten. It's certainly not a team strength. Otten's not a superior blocker. He didn't drop any balls on Sunday, but he has had some problems with drops. He's not really a downfield threat. I think he's got an average ceiling, Lee. I mean, he's not going to be George Kittle, Travis Kelce, even Hockenson. He's not going to be one of those guys. He's just not. He can be a serviceable tight end. But as the years go on, I think they'll be looking for an upgrade there. Lee, they made the playoffs with Kate Otten as the primary tight end last year, albeit it was an 8-9 season. It's certainly not a team strength.
No, it is not. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Bucks draft a tight end high next year.
Me either. And, you know, the biggest revelation, Steve, around $1 place is Cuban sandwiches are back in the press box on game days. You can't overstate the importance of that.
Two or one, Ira?
Two. One pregame, one at halftime.
Sage, here come your picks and a lot more insight, but we have to remind everybody Florida's Elite Restoration is their first phone call anytime they have a disaster in their home. Flood under your sink in the kitchen, mold in the bathroom, storm damage, fire, flood, whatever it might be. You call them first, 24/7. They will come out and give you a free evaluation at your property. And they've got all the technology and they've got all the knowledge, 20 years between Josh Martin, the owner, and his team, 20 years on the insurance adjuster side. So they know what they're looking for and they know how to set it up. So when they work for you on behalf of you, your home with your insurance company, they know how to beat their corruption of the insurance companies and get your money that you need to restore your property properly. Florida'sElite Restoration.com. Read all about them there and mention the Sage or Joe Bucks Fan when you call. And if you move forward with their service after the free assessment, you'll get $500 back. Florida'sElite Restoration.com. All right, Ira, we've put your feet to the fire when it comes to sticking by your season prediction. But hey, we go game by game here because every week is in real time. And now it's time for you to lay it out there for the fans. What do you think we see in this game? What's your call?
Well, Philly's the real deal, Steve. There's nothing illusory about their 2-0 record. They haven't even been playing that well, and they still win, which is the sign of a quality team. I'm not telling Buck fans anything they don't know. They're defending NFC champs, came close to winning it all last year, bringing most of their guys back. I don't think it's a good matchup for the Bucks, and here's why. I understand that Baker Mayfield's been sacked once through 2 weeks, almost 70 pass attempts. But these are the Eagles. It's not the Vikings, who have a lousy defense. It's not the Bears, who got overrun by the Chiefs. By the way, just in case Buck fans are wondering, Steve, I checked the halftime stats on the Bears-Chiefs game. Kansas City had 22 first downs at halftime. I don't know what the NFL record is, but that might be a record pace before Reed called off the dog. So here come the Eagles. Now, Steve, there were 9-2-0 teams going into this weekend. Five of them have already lost. The Saints, despicably. Atlanta got whooped. Washington beaten. Dallas stunned. And the Ravens, and I don't know, they had no business losing to the Colts, but they did. So five out of nine have already lost. Miami won, and San Francisco won. And then you'll have the winner of the Bucks-Eagles game. So I think the worst matchup is the Eagle pass rush. I just don't think the Bucks can hold up because I don't think they can run enough against the number one rush defense in the league to keep those guys at bay, the Haason Reddicks, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. I mean, they just come, they're relentless. I think Mayfield's going to be under siege for most of the night. So I'm looking at 27-16. Even the specter of looking at Rondé Barber get his ring at halftime with Jim Porter, the president of the Hall, looking on, and a lot of Rondé's old teammates. That's not going to be enough to protect Baker Mayfield from the Eagles. Now the Bucks have to worry about a running game that got untracked last week for Philly. Hurts hasn't played his best yet. So, Steve, it's not going to be a crippling loss if the Bucks lose. It's not crippling. They'll go to New Orleans on a short week. The Saints are devastated. They had a 17-0 lead in the fourth quarter and blew it. And Derek Carr looks like he's hurt, got a shoulder injury. I'd say he's doubtful right now to play against the Bucks. So that will bring Jameis Winston to bear in New Orleans, where Lee the Kemper will be watching the action, Steve. So I got the Eagles 27-16, 2-1 start for the Bucks. Nothing to wring your hands about, with a good chance to be 3-1. But the Eagles are the real deal. I think they're going to prove it Monday night.
I agree with you, unfortunately, Ira. I just think, you know, they're better in the trenches, and the Bucks don't really necessarily have outside the trenches enough to beat them, in my opinion. But I do think they'll keep it kind of close, and I think the Eagles are a touchdown better, 24-17. But the Bucks, I think, have been given the luxury of having this game not really have much stress to it because of the Saints' loss and the Falcons' loss. Hey, if they're 2-1, they're kind of where everybody expects them to be. I mean, everybody expects them to lose, in a sense, so they can play loose. And all they have to do is look at that Colts game that you referenced. I mean, there's a strong Baltimore team, and the Colts, with their backup running back, ran it down their throat. Zach Moss, a guy who's bounced around, third-round pick, ran it down their throat, and they got solid quarterback play. Gardner Minshew was sacked a bunch of times, but he didn't turn it over.
Moss ran 30 times today, Steve. 30.
Yeah, on the road. So it can be done, and man, if the Bucks can keep it close, the exciting thing for me is that they have the playmakers on every facet of the game, even on special teams, and maybe not a returner, but they certainly have a kicker who could do something crazy with a 60-yard kick, or they've got a punter that can change the game. So, and of course, we know the names on offense and defense. So, hey, it should be fun. If the Bucks win, Ira, they shock the world, and they instantly, in all craziness, Ira, they instantly become a favorite in the NFC, is that, or at least one of the top two or three. Is that fair to say?
Well, you're not going to put them past you know, the Niners and the Eagles, Steve.
Well, why not? They just beat the Eagles in this scenario.
I understand, Steve. I understand.
What am I missing, Ira? What am I missing?
You're missing that it's still early in the season, Steve. It's still early. Now, I'll say this, Steve. You know what the pregame motivation, the accent, the blackboard, when Bowles gathers the troops in the locker room before they go out, he'll say, hey, how's first place in the NFC South sound? That's the message. You got a chance to be undisputed after 3 weeks on top of this division and in fine shape to win it for a third year in a row. So they don't lack motivation, Steve. What they lack, I think, is a little beef in the trenches, and I think that's going to show up.
Hey, Sage, real quick. Todd Bowles had a quote this week, and he was making a point, but it actually came out of his mouth. I don't have the exact quote, but basically what he said was, if we lose this game, now that was a quote, if we lose, it's not the end of the world, and if we win, it's not the end of the world. We haven't changed the world. I don't know if I've ever heard a head coach in a long, long time say, if we lose. I don't think I've ever heard that come out of a coach's mouth. I know you heard that. What's your reaction to that?
It's rare, Steve. It's unusual. The much more common way of saying what Bowles was trying to say, Steve, and coaches do say this all the time, is you can't get too high and you can't get too low. That's the common refrain. Bowles went in another direction and actually talked about the ramifications of a potential loss Monday night. You're right, Steve. You don't hear it very often, but you understand what he was trying to say. Stay even keel. Everybody says it. Gruden used to say it. You know, don't listen to the elevator music, the outside stuff, distractions. You know, Bowles is coming out of his shell a little bit, Steve. He's coming up with some gems on a weekly basis, and I'll see if I can get another one out of him after the game tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, coaches say that in different ways. They'll say something like, it's one game. They put their pants on like we do, and we got another game in week 4, and it's a long season, but it's rare to actually hear somebody say the word lose, and he said it. I don't know if it's a jinx or not, but I just had to mention it. But we all know what he meant. I'm not trying to take him out of context. It's just kind of a strange thing to hear. Well, look, you are never a strange thing to hear. You'll be patrolling that locker room, getting all the insight. Is it fair, Ira, last question, to say that, A, that you will dine very well on Monday, and B, The Bucks are in fine shape as long as they don't get their asses clobbered.
I agree with that. A la the Denver Broncos today, I just watched Sean Payton's post-game interview. It was 3 minutes. He was looking around, hoping to get the hell out of there. Next question, you got a question. He couldn't wait to leave that podium. He did say it was embarrassing. How could you not? He said he's been on the short end of a lot of games, but not like this. Boy, you look at Sean Payton's eyes at that podium, he's in shock. And not just this game. They're 0-3. He's supposed to be tonight on shining armor, riding in and resurrecting Russell Wilson, Steve. Instead, it's been a disaster. And primarily, their defense is just awful. Their D coordinator is Vance Joseph. He's getting killed. He's got no clue how to stop people. Jalen Waddle didn't play today, Steve. They still put up 70 points. And I think they ran for 350 or 370. You don't see that, Steve. So you're right. We don't want a game like that, and I don't think we're going to get one.
Sage, I wanted to throw out there because I've taken some crap on it, and you're not the only one who gets some grief for your 6-11 prediction. Vita Vea, you know, I've talked a lot about his snap counts and he needs to play more. I don't blame Vita. I got nothing against Vita Vea. To me, it's the coaches. I'm not knocking Vita Vea for not playing more. Somebody's not putting him in. And yeah, they know what's going on behind the scenes, but I'd still like to see it for a couple of games and see if Vea really fails, if he has to play a few more snaps, one more series. But so I just want to clear that up. I think he's a great player. That's why I want to see him more. It's on the coaches, not on Vea. Ira Lee, do you have anything you want to clear your conscience on as long as we're all as long as we're in confession here?
No, because I'll get blowback for saying it.
don't say it, Lee. Don't say it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Oh, my gosh. Hey, Ira, look, where do you think the Glazers stand with this team? You know the Glazers, and we talk about them where other people don't really, I think, in the media. And we're not afraid to talk about them. I mean, what are they reassessing here? They have a lot to consider with the Bucks and all this salary cap situation. Jason Light's, no team has ever had the amount of dead cat salary cap money that the Bucks have had, and a lot of big offseason decisions. But now they're 2-0, and you know these guys want to win. You know they want to go to the owners' meeting next year in Florida, where they're sort of like the host team, or the host, if you will. And they want to walk around with their chest puffed out and saying, hey, look, we just won our fourth straight division title, boys. What are they thinking?
Well, I'll tell you how they're thinking firsthand, because I had 5 or 10 minutes with the Glazers towards the end of the game, right outside the Buck locker room. And there were a lot of Glazers, Lee. I mean, a lot of them. Joel was there. Brian was there. Avi was there. Ed was there. You know, as the players are coming into the room, you know, they are preceded by the Glazers, and they shake every hand. I mean every hand, from the equipment manager to the field turf guy to the photographer, everybody. And Steve, to your point, they're jubilant. And while this 2-0 start is going on, I know Buck fans don't care about it, but it's a fact. Their little soccer team across the pond named Manchester United, which is does nothing but print money, they look awful. They're off to a terrible start. The fans didn't like the Glazers over there when the team was winning. You can imagine what's going on now. There's organized protests or whatever. Anyway, to get their mind off Manchester United, they focus on the Tampa Bay Bucks with full force. You know, they're going to be on the field for Rondé's little ceremony Monday night. They're going to New Orleans the following week. They don't miss a game. They don't miss a game, especially Joel and Brian. They don't miss a regular season game, I think, since they bought the team. And that's a long, long time ago, almost 30 years. So they are jubilant, Steve. I think they need to order some bigger shirts, because they're bursting at the seams over this football team right now.
Did you get any juice from the Glazers on the Mike Evans contract situation? You get any vibe there?
It's the last thing on their minds. They're more interested in Mike Evans scoring 13 touchdowns this year, and then we'll show them the money and be happy to do it. I've said it from the start. The ball's in Evans' court. If the Bucks play well, if he plays well, he's going to retire as a Buccaneer.
Ira, since you and Steve brought up contracts, it perfectly dovetails into the question I have here. What did you make of Devin White taking to Instagram? And I will read from his Instagram post. This defense is so fun to be a part of. I'm stupid for trying to leave. Exclamation point.
The first thing that strikes me about that, Steve, is I don't think he ran that past his agent before he posted it. I just don't. And if I was his agent, I'd be mortified, Steve, mortified. Because we don't know how the season's going to turn out. I mean, it's off to a sensational start. Nobody's going to argue that. And White's playing his ass off. I'm not arguing that either. But it's early. It's damn early. And if Swift runs for 150 yards Monday night for the Eagles, and they put up 35 points on the Bucs, and White misses some tackles, it's a whole different story. But, you know, there's something naive and youthful about Devin White that's a little bit appealing. You know, he's not a ruthless businessman, which I like. And neither is Mike Evans, by the way. But, you know, some other guys that maybe are more seasoned than White would take a different approach. They'd still be pissed off. Where's my extension? He bounces around. Lee, you never know what the guy's going to come up with. You never know what the guy's mood is going to be. But right now, he's balling. He's balling.
Yep. You know, I heard some people grumble, some of our readers. They were grumbling in the comments. White disappeared again. No, he didn't disappear. He was fine. He was fine of Fields. He talked about that, Ira. The video is pretty obvious if you watch the video, especially what Brian Baldinger had. So, no, he didn't disappear. He did what was asked of him, and he did a damn good.
And he did it very effectively, Steve.
Well, Sage, I thought it was fun that Peter King himself was open about, hey, I got the Bucks all wrong, and I seem to have screwed this up, and you know, good for them. And he put them as the 10th ranked team in the league and was pretty apologetic. What'd you think of that?
You know, I shouldn't be surprised because King's got a huge platform and he's worked hard for it. He deserves it. But it shows the kind of stature that Peter King has in the pro football journalism community. Lee, nobody cares what Jason Lockett picked for the Buccaneers before training camp started, but everybody reads Peter King. That Monday scribe, that thing's got to be about 8,000 words. Lee, it takes about a half an hour to finish it. I don't read the stuff about the coffee and the beer, but I read it. And even Baker Mayfield, Steve, even Baker Mayfield knows what the hell Peter King is thinking, Peter King is saying. It shows that even within pro football writer community, that there are layers, there are tiers. And you know what? King's in tier one.
Real quick, Ira. 2 weeks ago, what did you think of King writing 7 sentences, not including excerpts, about flies?
House flies, Sarah. House flies.
Just flies. He didn't use the word house. Flies.
He gets off on tangents, Lee. It's incredible. And, of course, I'm on record, with my weekly appearance on Chris Russo, where, they give me that introduction, the end of the introduction every week. You can't push me around like Peter King. So I weigh in on King once in a while.
All right. That is the end of the Sage. He'll be at Big Storm Brewing Company, Ybor City, 7th Avenue there, upstairs. Great location. Sunday, October 1st. Watching the Bucks and the Saints. $3 Bay Beers. $5 Hail Mary shots. I can see a couple of those going down the Sage's gullet. $6 Big Storm. I don't know what it is, but it sounds like Ira needs one in the third quarter. It's all at joebucksfan.com. Ira?
Yeah, I got a final note over here. Lee, you'll appreciate this. The famous Clay-listed fight. Yes, it was Clay before he became Muhammad Ali. The Wayback Machine, 64. The first fight, not the second one when Liston quit. The first one when Clay was a 7-1 underdog. Nobody gave him a chance. Some people thought he might get killed, actually killed, in the ring by Sonny Liston, who was a fearsome guy. And after the match, after the bout, and that was the one that Liston quit. Yeah, Liston quit after like the 6th or 7th round. Didn't come out of his corner. And Clay's running around the ring like a wild man. And he's standing on the ropes, and he's shouting to the crowd, and mostly at the writers. And he looks at the writers, and he says, "I shook up the world. I shook up the world." Steve, why am I saying that? Because of the Bucks happen to win Monday night and go to 3-0 and beat a team that was in the Super Bowl last year and that is considered a favorite to get back to the Super Bowl. They'll shake up the world Monday night, Steve. They'll shake up the world.
They will, Ira. All right, good job. Of course, the Sage next podcast will quote Joe Louis and Bob Cousy, and we'll talk to you then.